This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a retrospective look at events commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Movement, conversation on the art of bringing creative know-how to local production events in a city that loves to party, or an evening stage production that explores a Beethoven masterpiece. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. September 15th marks the 50th anniversary of the Birmingham bombings. Four little girls, Addie Mae Collins, Denise McNair, Carol Robertson, and Cynthia Wesley, were killed when a bomb exploded at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, in 1963. It was a turning point in the civil rights movement in this country. Their story, half a century later, is being remembered with the national staged reading of Four Little Girls, Birmingham, 1963, written by Christina Hamm and directed by Ed Bishop of the American Theater Project of New Orleans. And Ed Bishop, who is a native of Birmingham, joins me now. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you, Diane. I'm glad to be here.
Ed, tell me, where were you when you learned of the church bombing in 1963?
I was actually in church, and I remember distinctly thinking about school, because it was the first week of school. What would happen again the school year? Because last year was such an important year for us, marching in Birmingham. And I was thinking about that when I heard that the church had been bombed. And that was devastating to me.
And you were around the age of these little
14
girls.
14 years old. We had marched all summer and the school year before. And I sneaked off to the marches. My mother did not know. In fact, as a lot of kids, sneaked off into the from their parents to the marches. We went through so much for so many things that we were committed to being about. And people, so many people who made us believe that something could change, that we had a better place to be. It was about integration and education. These kids were incredible children. Some of them played with Condoleezza Rice. Some of them come from the best backgrounds, and some of them had the best opportunities afforded them for that time period. I even came out looking forward to junior high school. I was looking forward to college, those kinds of things. And it was quite an emotional time, full of dreams and full of passions.
What elements do you focus on in retelling this story?
And the dreams and the possibilities of these human beings whose life was snuffed out. We like to humanize the characters and bring to bear certain qualities that are possibilities. For instance, Addie Mae wanted to be a professional baseball player. Denise McNair, of course, wanted to be a pediatrician. Cynthia wanted to be an educator, you know. These are the lives that we convey on stage. The dreams. Dreams deferred is the issue here because someone hated someone else. 2 minutes before the bombing, someone called and said, your church is going to be bombed. This was a planned murder of little children who had dreams and possibilities.
What are your thoughts 50 years later as we remember the events of the civil rights movement? Last month, the March on Washington, King's I Have a Dream speech, and now the Birmingham bombings.
I find myself after 50 years looking at and processing what we've really given as a foundation for the generation behind us and two or three generations behind us. What have we really given back? what have we really done to reinforce the ideas that we set forth? Freedom, independence, the right to have a life, integration, education, the poor, feeding the poor, giving back. And I wonder, what can we do at the end of our time to make it better?
Now, tell us about the staged reading. How do you handle this emotional subject matter?
The average age of the cast is 14. And through some luck of the draw, their parents educated them on the Civil Rights Movement and the four girls in Birmingham, the Birmingham bombing, and they came prepared, but not as prepared as they assumed that they would be, because the message Christina Hamm wrote was full of passion and full of thought. And I conveyed that thought and passion to them with stories about my life, period, in Birmingham. I mean, I got a dog bite to prove it, a dog mark. And they said, "Oh, Mr. Bishop, you were really there? We got great artists on stage. Some come from NOCA, J-PASS. Some of the kids come from elevated schools of art and training, from junior high schools that offered theater education. And Ashay Performing Arts Center, which has a connection with arts training for young people. So we got a really good background of artists." They were offered an opportunity to read the script, book in hand, and they said, "No, Mr. Bishop, we want to do this script off book." And they were committed to doing it. So I had a challenge to do that. I said, "Well, this is a full-fledged show here, you know." And within reason, we still called it a stage read because there would be no props and imaginary props and those kinds of things. But the kids are incredible. The singing is incredible. Valerie Francis, formerly of Dillard University, committed herself to training these kids vocally. And their talent on stage is pretty darn good.
What can we learn by looking back at this difficult time in our nation's history?
We had the right opportunity to be recommitted through this 50th year of commemorative activities to reaffirm where we're going, how we're going to get there, future planning of our lives, of our children's lives, and our grandchildren's lives to make this a better world.
Ed, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Ed Bishop will direct the stage reading of Four Little Girls, Birmingham, 1963, written by Christina Hamm, presented by Project One Voice, American Theater Project of New Orleans, Ashay Cultural Arts Center, and Dillard University Theater. There are two venues for this production, September 13th and 14th at 7 p.m. at the Ashay Cultural Arts Center, 1712 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard, and on September 15th at 7 p.m. at Dillard University Theater, 2601 Gentilly Boulevard. Admission is free. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. When Gary Solomon Jr. graduated from the New Orleans Center for the Creative Arts, his plan was to go to New York University, become a lighting designer, and never come back. Katrina changed all that. WWNO's Sharon Litwin, who produces Notes from New Orleans, talks with Gary about the successful entertainment technology and design business he has built here.
When I was at NOCA, as a high school student, I was focused on lighting design. And I went to NYU in a small program that was about 12 students in our program. And it was also focused on design for theater. And I thought that I was going to be a lighting designer until about 2 years into the program. I realized there were a ton of designers a whole heck of a lot better than I was, and they were making no money. And it scared me. I said, well, how do you take this weird, very niche kind of interest that I have and try to make a living out of it?
So Gary Solomon widened his focus to include a more comprehensive approach to entertainment production. At 22, he decided to return to post-Katrina New Orleans, get a job, and then try to build his own business here.
I came back to New Orleans for a particular job, actually. I came back to work for another company that was in a rental and staging industry, doing business development for them. It was a way to come home. It was a way to connect with some friends who ended up becoming business partners, and we ended up building a business together from that. We had a first client who believed in us and trusted us with a project that was really important, and that was the foundation on which we built our business.
His first major project was the design and installation of the stage door canteen in the National World War II Museum. The success of that project led to others, and to clients calling him instead of the other way around.
That's really kind of been the way we've grown our business, very organically. And being based in New Orleans is a great place to build a business like this. I think that we are a first-class event and production city that may not have all the resources it needed. And so if the decision for me was to be trying to build this kind of business in a city like New York, where the competition is fierce, and at the time I started it, I would have just been some other 22-year-old kid who was trying to do something that was way out of my league, I'd probably just be vying for doing any kind of work. So I appreciate that I could be based here and doing really great work.
Now, at the ripe old age of 27, Gary and his 5-year-old Solomon Group have designed the exterior lighting of the Superdome, built out Champion Square, redesigned WDSU's television studio, and brought the historic Civic Theater back into commerce, among many other projects.
The business strategy, if you want to call it that, is let's find a client, like an event client, when they come to New Orleans. And until we existed, they often had to travel in their production company to do the kind of work they were looking to do. And so if they were willing to travel someone into New Orleans, my philosophy, my hope, is that let's latch on to them and show them how we play on our own home turf. And then when they go on to the next city where they'll hold their event next year, let's let them bring us with them. And so instead of seeing companies come into New Orleans and do work in our backyard, let's go out and compete on the national scale.
And Gary is now employing more than 100 people. He says there's no shortage of talented and creative people who want to work and live in New Orleans. Some are locals, some are not.
It's a pretty wide range. We have employees from as far west as Los Angeles and as far east as Lebanon. It's a really eclectic group, building families here and really investing in the community, sending their kids to school here. It's changed the way we've had to think about recruitment. What they're looking for now is actually not what they were looking for 5 years ago when we started to recruit. Rarely did I have to try to introduce a prospective employee to somewhere their kid could go to school. I'm 27, I don't have kids yet. And so it was not necessarily on my radar, but it's what's important to them. And so what our benefits packages and things like that have had to start to change.
Each project has been exhilarating and exhausting, but none more so than the recent Essence Festival.
Producing Essence was a pretty overwhelming and amazing experience at the same time. I think we counted 540,000 attendees over 8 stages, over 4 days, and the addition of what they call the Family Reunion Day this year, which attracted 55,000 people on that day alone. So it was about really kind of bringing the brand of Essence Magazine to life for that one half of 1 week here in New Orleans, and for us to be the stewards of bringing that brand to life. That's exactly what we like doing.
To learn more about Gary Solomon and his company, go to WWNO.org or NOLAVIE.com. For WWNO, I'm Sharon Litwin.
Southern Rep Theater opens its 2013-14 season with the regional premiere of Moises Kaufman's five-time Tony Award-nominated 33 Variations, a work inspired by Beethoven's masterful Diabelli Variations. Joining me now to talk about this production is Southern Rep's artistic director, Aimé Hayes, and actor Mike Harkins. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thanks, Diane. It's nice to be here.
So tell me, how did you come to choose this work for your season opener?
Mesa Production Company got in touch with us about partnering on this exciting play, and we love this play, so we said yes, absolutely.
And what's being explored in 33 Variations?
It's a thrilling mystery story starring Beethoven, who becomes obsessed with a piece of music written by Diabelli, and he goes on to write 33 Variations of it, meets the present, where we have Dr. Catherine Brandt, a musicologist who becomes obsessed about why Beethoven became obsessed about the Diabelli Variations. It's a wonderful swirl about the people in their lives, the people that they love, and the people that they harm in their pursuit of this goal.
So this is a mystery that unfolds.
And throughout the play, we understand both of their journeys. And all of this is underscored by a wonderful concert pianist in town, Dr. Zha Lin. So we have a beautiful Baldwin piano and live piano music throughout playing the Diabelli Variations.
Wow. Now, Mike, tell me about your role in this production.
My character is actually named Mike, convenient enough, so I don't have to listen for anything new. He is a nurse for ALS patients, physical therapy and such. So Catherine Brandt, the musicologist, is suffering from ALS, and it's her slow degradation of her body throughout that process as it goes. So like as Beethoven is physically becoming more and more impaired and losing his hearing and suffering, Catherine Brandt is running the parallel in the present. And so I'm the nurse. I fall in love with her daughter, Clara, and I pursue her. I'm kind of the goofy counterpoint to a lot of the serious scholars in the play.
What was challenging for you in this role?
For me, a lot of it's keeping it fresh, finding the new fun points in it. I'm there to take Clara out of this negative part of her world and help take her to the next step of her life, which should be more relaxed, more enjoyable, more... I don't know. There's a growth to Clara after she meets Mike.
Yes, I think so. The play, I think, really focuses, too, on caretakers for people with ALS and the stress that that can create. And Dr. Brandt's journey is a pretty serious one. And I think it's so important that Mike's character is there to help the daughter coping with her mother. It's kind of a good exploration of that. And I think Mike is just really the comic relief. He's terrific and passionate and funny.
Now, there are a lot of spinoffs from this particular production. We're talking about an educational focus and awareness on ALS within this production?
Right. We've partnered with the ALS Association of Louisiana, the Mississippi chapter, and also Team Gleason to help create a world without ALS. It was a natural partnership. They really responded to the play, not just because it's about ALS, but also because, as they said, it's about life and it's about things that matter. So we're really excited about this partnership. Also, we believe Steve Gleason will be attending a few events, and I think he's just such an inspiration. And I think this play is about coping with really serious issues and keeping the love of your family and your life around you.
And also, there is another offshoot from the 33 Variations that's going on at the Contemporary Arts Center, and that we have Dr. William Kinderman in town. Tell us more about him, who he is, and what he's going to be doing with this production.
Sure. Dr. Kinderman is the foremost expert on the Diabelli Variations, and actually the playwright in his theater group spent quite a lot of time with him learning about Diabelli and Beethoven. And he will be here with his wife, Dr. Catherine Sire. And on Thursday, he's going to be at Roussel Hall at Loyola University at 7:30 performing the Diabelli Variations. And then on Friday, he's going to be at Southern Rep at the CAC at 1 p.m. to do a one-hour lecture where he plays part of the Diabelli Variations and then does a little lecture. And that will be done with his wife, Dr. Catherine Sire. Also, Friday night, there will be a talk back with Dr. Catherine Sire and Dr. William Kinderman.
So, and where will that be?
That will be at the CAC after the show, so people who come to the performance that night which is in partnership with Friends of Music and the Birdfoot Music Festival, will then be able to see Dr. Kinderman and Dr. Sayer if they missed him in the other two events. So
there's a lot going on and a lot associated with the 33 Variations by Moises Kaufman.
Yes, it's really exciting.
Well, thanks so much for stopping by.
You're welcome.
We were talking with Southern Rep Theater's Artistic Director, Aimee Hayes, and actor Mike Harkins. Southern Rep, in partnership with Mesa Production Company, presents 33 Variations by Moises Kaufman at the Contemporary Arts Center, 900 Camp Street. Performances run September 11th through 29th. We have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. The NOCA Institute and NOCA's Visual Arts Department announced the opening of the 2013 Alumni Exhibition featuring work by Sam Crosby, Logan Dixon, and Ashley Teemer. There will be an opening reception on Thursday, September 12th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. The 2013 Alumni Exhibition will be on view through Friday, October 25th in the Ken Kirschman Art Space, located on NOCA's campus at 2800 Charter Street. Admission to both the exhibition and the opening reception is free. Le Petit Theater's regular season is underway with Lombardi. Ron Gural directs the play about the legendary Green Bay Packers coach Vince Lombardi. Performances run through September 21st. More info at lepetittheater.com. And Jazz in the Park, Armstrong Park's signature event, continues its fourth season. This Thursday featuring Devel Crawford and Stephanie Jordan. The hours of Jazz in the Park are noon to 8 p.m., including an arts and crafts village and marketplace. The event is admission free. More info at armstrongpark.org. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.